Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it's now official. The NSA was spying on many, many people, and Trump's initial reactions to the spying were generally correct. I don't know how specifically correct they were, but there really is no such thing as phone tapping as we understood the term as it was used a long time ago. Here is a little bit on that report from Judge Napolitano on the NSA conducting illegal searches under Obama.
Ordinary release of once top secret documents showing the extent to which the National Security Administration under President Barack Obama routinely violated standards, commitments, and the Constitution itself to spy on Americans without a warrant, something our next guest has been warning us all about for years. Here now, Judge Andrew Napolitano, Fox News senior judicial analyst. I could ask you, how did you know? But specifically, what these top secret documents say is that 5 out of every 20 NSA internet searches actually violated safeguards the government was supposed to keep
sacred. So the reason this is extraordinary is because this is one of the rare federal courts in the United States that meets in secret. No press is allowed. No adversary is there. We don't even know what their rulings are. But they released a ruling last night that they issued last month, which chastised the NSA for spying without warrants. The NSA acknowledged that it violated federal law, but the problem is far worse than the court has acknowledged.
Let's go back to the book itself. The Fourth Amendment of the Constitution specifically says no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. The FISA court, which you just mentioned, was supposed to be the instrument of that amendment.
Instead, it's the enabler of the NSA. It doesn't issue warrants that particularly describe the place to be searched or the person or thing to be seized. It issues warrants for groups like everybody in zip code 10036, which is where we are now. All customers of Verizon, which is 113 million people. And its warrants are not based on probable cause. It's based on governmental need.
And we got a taste of what this means by the unmasking of General Flynn, because that was not a wiretap that was focused on General Flynn. It was a secondary or a tertiary.
You're exactly right. It was the use of NSA-generated data without a FISA warrant, under the guise of being for national security purposes, used for blatant political purposes, a serious threat to the freedom of the republic.
And it's not only the second or third person. They could go out to the sixth person.
You go out
six
to
degrees of separation.
6 degrees of separation, if you do the math, covers about 330 million people, the population of the United States. That's what NSA claims it can legally spy upon.
Glad you're a watchdog. Judge Andrew Napolitano, thank you very much.
Here's a little bit more on that. Pretty stunning stuff, really.
In 20 internet searches conducted by the National Security Agency involving Americans during the Obama administration violated constitutional privacy protections, and that practice went on for years. Not only that, but the Obama administration was harshly rebuked by the FISA court for doing it. That's the conclusion from shocking new evidence tonight about what one senator calls an enormous abuse of power. Chief Washington correspondent James Rosen has the story.
On the day President Obama visited Los Angeles last October to yuck it up with Jimmy Kimmel, lawyers for the National Security Agency were quietly informing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court that NSA had systematically violated the rights of countless Americans, a subject covered ironically on Kimmel's program.
People expect the government to monitor this enough to protect them from bad guys. But they worry that if government is in there too much, then that who's going to protect them from government?
Declassified documents first obtained by the news outlet Circa show the FISA court sharply rebuked the administration. With greater frequency than previously disclosed to the court, NSA analysts had used U.S. person identifiers to query the results of internet upstream collection, even though NSA Section 702 minimization procedures prohibited such queries. Minimization refers to the precautions the government is supposed to take to ensure its infringements on Americans' rights are kept to a minimum. The judges blasted NSA's institutional lack of candor and added this is a very serious Fourth Amendment issue.
And tonight, for the first time, we can say confidently that there's been a finding that some of that espionage, that spying on Americans actually violated the law.
The documents show it was back in 2011 that the FISA court first determined NSA's procedures to be, quote, statutorily and constitutionally deficient with respect to their protection of U.S. person information. 5 years later, 2 weeks before Election Day, the judges learned that NSA had never adequately enacted the changes it had. The NSA Inspector General and its Office of Compliance for Operations have been conducting other reviews covering different time periods, the judges noted, with preliminary results suggesting that the problem was widespread during all periods of review.
There's a linear connection between excessive acquisition of data by the intelligence community, distribution of that raw data to people who do not need to know it, availability of unmasking that is producing the real true names of the human beings whose emails, texts, and phone calls were the subject of all this, and then ultimately the selective revelation of those names.
Senator Rand Paul called this an amazing abuse of power. A spokesman for former President Obama did not return our request for comment. These disclosures are timely, though, as Section 702 of the FISA Amendments Act, one of the primary means by which U.S. citizens are caught up in incidental surveillance, is up for reauthorization, Brett, by the Congress at year's end.
James, there's some evidence that the FISA court was essentially getting frustrated with the Obama administration.
And running out of patience, yes. The administration was trying to delineate how bad this practice was, what the scope of the noncompliance was. The court said, we are skeptical that you've actually got your hands around this. The administration kept asking for more time to do that, and eventually the FISA court said, no, you're not going to get as much time as you would like. It all stretched out past Inauguration Day, and now the new Attorney General and the new Director of National Intelligence have certified to this court that they've put in different procedures.
Okay, James, thanks. Follow this. What do you think should be done about the alleged abuse of power here in this story?
Well, it's pretty amazing, but I was thinking about this when I was listening to these clips. When Obama came in and he presented himself or was presented by his handlers as a new type of politician, post-political, post-racial, a guy that was going to kind of tower over the political landscape of America and bring healing and get a lot of good things done. But one of the things that he presented himself as is totally above corruption. And he'd have this, the most transparent administration in history. And he turned out to be just another example of the kind of person who falls in love with government and finds government to be the answer to every human problem, which is a very scary idea when you think about the limitations of government. 614, Kelly O'Connell will take a break here, 523-1450 and 805-6180. Okay, so for a little local news, the second Tai Chan trial ended in a mistrial. It was hung jury. And so I have talked to Mark D'Antonio, and he said that he wants to come on and talk and discuss the case and other issues. So it's kind of interesting. It seemed like a slam dunk case, but I didn't sit in on any of the testimony or any of the cross-examination, any of the proceedings. So I don't know what happened in the trial itself, other than a hung jury. Hung jury can occur for many different reasons, but here is a little bit from KOB4.
The former Santa Fe County Sheriff's deputy accused of murdering a fellow deputy is off the hook again for now.
Tai Chan's retrial has ended with another hung jury. This afternoon, the judge declared a mistrial since those jurors just could not agree on a verdict.
Kai Porter is live in Las Cruces with the reaction from Tai Chan's defense and Jeremy Martin's family.
Tom Tessa, the jury deliberated for just 3.5 hours this afternoon, and then around 3:30, they told the judge that they could not reach a verdict, and the judge declared the mistrial. The jury deadlocking on the final vote. Here's the breakdown. No jurors voted for first-degree murder, 5 voted for second-degree murder, 1 voted for voluntary manslaughter, and 6 jurors voted not guilty. Now, this coming after the jury listened to 2 weeks of testimony in this trial. Prosecutors argued Chan was guilty of murdering Martin, mainly because Chan shot Martin 5 times in the back as Martin ran down the hall. Chan took the stand in his own defense and claimed he shot Martin in self-defense after Martin attacked him in their hotel room and pointed a gun at him. Here's John Day, Chan's defense attorney, this afternoon after the judge declared another mistrial.
Chan is not guilty of the crimes he was charged with. This verdict, the outcome today shows that reasonable people can differ on what happened that night. But it's clear that the juries have looked at this case twice, and no jury is willing to convict him at all. So we're hopeful that the state takes that into consideration in determining what to do next.
Obviously, this was not the outcome Martin's family wanted after having to sit through yet another emotional trial. Here's what Martin's widow, Sarah Martin, told us after the mistrial.
I think that it's hard because my husband was stolen, and he doesn't get to come and tell his side of the story. He was taken from us. But his life matters. His life matters. And he wouldn't give up on us, and I won't give up on him. His 4 children deserve to be told that the man who shot their father in the back, that there are consequences for that behavior.
So what is next with this case? Well, we asked the district attorney. You're going to hear his response coming up tonight at 6:30. And if there's a possibility, there could be a third trial.
For the second time, a jury failed to reach a verdict in the murder trial of a former Santa Fe County Sheriff's Deputy, Ty Chan. This afternoon, the judge again declared a mistrial because the jury deadlocked. Our Kai Porter joins us live now from Las Cruces. And Kai, could there be possibly a third trial?
Well, Tom, the Doña Ana County District Attorney certainly didn't rule it out as a possibility when we spoke to him this afternoon. Now, the jury listened to 2 weeks of testimony, and then they deliberated for just 3.5 hours before telling the judge that they could not reach a unanimous decision. Take a look here at the breakdown of the jury's final vote. No jurors voted for first-degree murder, 5 voted for second-degree murder, 1 voted for voluntary manslaughter, and 6 voted not guilty. Prosecutors argued Chan shot Martin 5 times in the back as Martin ran from their Las Cruces hotel room in 2014. Chan took the stand, though, in his own defense and claimed he shot Martin in self-defense after Martin attacked him and pointed a gun at him. District Attorney Mark D'Antonio says he's disappointed with the results of the retrial, and I asked him if he plans to put Chan on trial for a third time.
The judge instructed us to have it done in a reasonable amount of time, decision. I would expect about a week or so. The family's input is extremely important to me in that case. We discussed it already a little bit, just a while ago. So I would think no more than about a week before I have a decision.
And, of course, we will let you know and keep you posted if the district attorney does decide to put Chan on trial for a third time. Live in Las Cruces, Kai Porter, KOB, Eyewitness News 4.
And really kind of incredible that someone gets shot in the back 5 times and the defense is able to hang a jury twice. Now, I've asked some people about it, and some of the people blame the jury. That I talked to, they felt like the jury was too sympathetic or too dumb, whatever the explanation was. But you know, I don't see how you get around the fact that guys, all of his wounds were in his back. I mean, and alcohol was involved. What was incredible to me is that 6 people said he was not guilty at all. So I've got another clip here to see if there's anything else. And this is from KRQE. And hold on just a second. I do not hear anything emanating from
time. A jury could not decide if a former Santa Fe County deputy is guilty of murdering his partner in Las Cruces after a drunken argument. News 13's Jose Mitri has both sides after a judge again declared a mistrial in the case against Tai Chan.
He was taken from us, but his life matters.
The end to that life of Santa Fe County Deputy Jeremy Martin weighed on the jury today, tasked with deciding whether it was murder or self-defense when former Deputy Tai Chan killed Martin at a Las Cruces hotel in October 2014. After 2 long weeks of testimony, a jury took less than 3.5 hours to decide they could not reach a verdict.
His 4 children deserve to be told that the man who shot their father in the back, that there are consequences for that behavior.
But Chan says he fired in self-defense to fight off an attack from Martin.
The district attorney's office has spent hundreds of thousands of tax dollars trying Mr. Chan, and the results this time are even worse for them than last time.
Seeking justice in death of a police officer is never a waste of time, never a waste of resources. That's my honest belief.
Attorneys tell us the final vote had 6 jurors deciding on a not guilty verdict. No jurors went for first-degree murder, 5 for second-degree, and 1 for voluntary manslaughter.
Jurors in the first trial last year agreed Chan was guilty but didn't agree on the charge. Now the district attorney says he's considering a 3rd retrial and even changing the first-degree murder charge. In Las Cruces, Lizzie Mitri, KRQE News 13.
The district attorney expects to decide on whether to retry Chan within a week.
So, do you think that they'll retry that? Now, number one, who do you blame for this? You may not have enough information to decide who's at fault in what would seem like an obvious conviction for someone getting shot in the back. Do you blame the DA? Do you blame the jury? The judge, the court system, you know? It is a case that when it first came out, it just seemed like they were not going to have any problem convicting the guy, but at the same time, every case is different. Every case presents its own challenges, and there are different things to deal with in each different scenario. But you have to admit it's kind of surprising now. If they retried Chan, here is one thing to think about. In theory, the government could go after and retry any person who was accused of a crime. They could prosecute them as many times as they wanted if they had a hung jury each time, because it's inconclusive. But if there's any prosecutorial wrong, any mistakes or error, anything that the defense can point to, they can use that as an argument to say that it is double jeopardy. So I would assume if those guys have their act together, they will file something like that if this case is refiled. But on the other hand, do you think that it is an important part of public policy for this guy to be tried as many times as possible till he's convicted? And how would you feel like about a plea deal in which he agreed to do manslaughter and maybe a couple of years behind bars? Would that be better than just walking away? Would you be upset if this scenario played out here and a police officer was shot by his partner or by a person that he was working with in the back, stone cold dead, and nothing happened to him? Because one of the options that they could do is to not retry him. 805-6180 if you want to text your opinion. 523-1450 if you want to call in. We'll take a little break now for some local news.
Changes
Now, I have a little news for you campers who are planning in the upcoming holiday to go to Elephant Butte. We heard for years how Elephant Butte was drying up to nothing, and somebody told me about these giant catfish that they were finding dead in these mud holes. But now, too much water in the campgrounds. There's no such thing as utopia. There's always problems. But here it is from KOB4.
Water is rising at our state's largest lake just in time for the Memorial Day weekend. Officials at Elephant Butte Lake are expecting about 100,000 visitors over the holiday weekend. But some campers trying to secure that perfect spot on the shore before the crowds arrive are running into some trouble. Kai Porter shows us.
It's that time of year again when RVs and boats start lining the shores around Elephant Butte Lake. And this year, officials say water levels haven't been this high in about 10 years. A welcome sight for campers like Wei Wen from Albuquerque.
Water so far this year, they come up compared to last year about 5-6 feet higher.
Wen has been spending Memorial Day weekend at the lake for 30 years. Both he and his granddaughter, Milan, have noticed their old camping spots are now covered in water.
It's fun to go into the water every year. It's fun to see the island just goes into different levels.
And if you've ever been to Elephant Butte Lake, you know how tempting it can be to try to set up camp as close to the water as possible. But park officials say currently the water level is rising by 2 feet a week. And that's left some campers in a pretty tough spot. Just take a look at this. In these pictures from the Elephant Butte 5 Tons Facebook page, you can see the water's risen so fast, some campers and trailers are now in it. And this is why park officials say you should never leave your campsite unattended.
I know there's some out here that we've seen that are fifth wheels. It's going to be hard for them to even hook up to their trailer because they're going to have to put their vehicle in the water.
Salvador Gonzalez, the lake's boating manager, says you can actually face a fine of around $80 if you leave your campsite unattended for more than 24 hours. And if you come back to yours looking like this, you're on your own.
So they would have to get a tow company or somebody in town that's going to be able to help them out.
And nobody wants to spend Memorial Day weekend dealing with that headache. At a very full Elephant Butte Lake, Ty Porter, KOB, Eyewitness News 4.
Wow. Did you say 2 feet a week? That's pretty good, huh? Well, and they've got flooding all over the West from all the snowfall, the build up of the snow, and there was just a snow, I'm sure, I think I mentioned it, that there was a, was it last weekend, there was a snowstorm up in Colorado, and they had hail, and they had a lot of broken trees from heavy snow. So there's an incredible amount of snow up in the mountains in the West we should be grateful for. And speaking of which, I've got a little bit of local weather for you. AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23, 1450, 805, 6180 to text. I got my text buddy here. Ooh, somebody texted in. And they said, okay, so I might have missed a text from this person, but Kelly, my question is this: what are we to do? The county has multiple crises at this point in time. It can't function due to nut jobs on the left. These people aren't going to stop, so what do we do? That must be from another day, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's from today. I just want to know how they got the same jury that was in the Casey Anthony trial. Well done. And from Lydia, defense closing argument on YouTube, very impressive, highlighting mistakes in initial investigation, not doing DNA on blood on bed that turned out to be chance. Wow. Holy cow. I didn't even know about that. I got to go look and take a listen to that video. And maybe, you know what, I'm either today or tomorrow, we'll play a little bit of that closing argument for you. But it's mistakes like that that plant seeds of doubt. Now, there was a mistake in the transmission of the statement from Chan in which his claim of self-defense was cut out. Now, I'm sure the DA will say it was on accident. Probably was on accident. But when the jury finds out, they begin to form the suspicion that the DA may not be up front about everything. And then if there's a mistake on the bed, that's a huge deal. I mean, that is a gigantic deal. I wasn't even aware of that. All right, we'll take a little break here and come back. 638 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces AM, 1450, 523, 1450, 805-6180 for your little text buddy. We'll be right back. All right, so I'm looking through these clips. Man, there's a lot of them. Didn't even realize this resource there. I think what I'm going to have to do is go home and listen to them so I don't put a bunch of stuff on that you may not find interesting. Amazing, though. Amazing, and maybe it was just a spectacular defense, you know. They say good defense beats a good offense. All right, here's some news for you that was a little bit eyebrow raising, I should say. Majority says mainstream media publishes fake news. Now, you're wondering if the mainstream media was able to control the narrative, the story, the storyline, because there's so many angry liberals out there that are infuriated and don't really a lot of times make linear arguments. They just talk in conclusions about what a nutbag, what a terrible Hitler Trump is and everything. You know, it's kind of interesting. We go from one person who never could do any wrong to a person that every time he blinks, he's broken some federal law. And so you kind of question, where is the narrative headed? If the mainstream media has a narrative, it's the one they want to put out there is that we have the truth. We're unbiased. Now, there's a lot of things that are fighting against that right now. One of which is when the New York Times makes a major headline article about this statement by Comey that comes off of this note that he wrote that nobody's ever seen that somebody calls in and describes to the newspaper. That is something that, as these type of stories get leaked out, that is the type of thing that takes people in. Anybody of common sense hears that, even the most primitive high school dropout would hear something like that and say, you know what? Is that where news comes from? Is that a typical thing that somebody would call up a newspaper and say, I saw a note on somebody else's table and this is what I remember about it? So you've got this major, and this is the problem for the media. They are burning up they're using up in going after Trump. They're using up the thing that they need to exist, you know? So they need people to think they have credibility. They need people to believe in their rectitude, in their honesty, in their transparency, in their lack of having a grudge. And they can't do that. It's so transparent that the media is in on it. They're on this bandwagon to try to destroy Trump. Now, what exactly it was about Trump that had to be destroyed? Exactly, was it he was rude? He was brash. He insulted people. What was it about Trump or Bush that had to be destroyed? Because we've been through the same thing with Bush. He made a mistake. He lied. Did he lie? Go back and, you know, all of these different people that the media has gone after. But I think I think what's happening is the choir is singing together and they're enjoying the melody and the harmony so much that they can't wipe the grin off their face. They can't move away from the train wreck that they think that they're seeing. And so they're celebrating together the destruction of Trump. But I mean, and if Trump is destroyed, does the mainstream media make it? Do they survive? I don't know if Fox News is going to make it. They've lost major parts of their organization, and the only one that's left now is Hannity, and they're going after him. So I think the entire press seems to be in meltdown. But here's the news from this story. Nearly two-thirds of Americans, and this is from thehill.com, nearly two-thirds of Americans say the mainstream press is full of fake news, a sentiment that is held by a majority of voters across the ideological spectrum. 65% of voters believe there's a lot of fake news in the mainstream media. That includes 80% of Republicans, 60% of independents, 53% of Democrats. It's a stunning number. And this comes out of a Harvard poll. So they're doing damage to themselves. I mean, honestly, there are some of these people that I've heard that have gone after Trump that I don't care if I ever hear him talk again. Is it because I love Trump so much? No. It's because now I know that this scheme that they're involved in is the only thing that they care about. I don't trust these people anymore, the Jake Tappers, the Ryan Lizzas. And there were many times in the past when I read stories or listened to broadcasts from these people, and I was kind of on the fence, you know. And now I don't give them any credibility. So, and I think there's a lot of people like that out there. So what comes next? What is the next move from these people? Where will Americans get their news if CNN and MSNBC really do fall into the total destruction that they deserve? Where will we get news from? Or is everybody going to have to be their own reporter? We'll take a break. 523-1450 and 805-61802. Text Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. 648. We're going to be right back. All right, so here's a little bit more on Deep State from Dick Morris.
One of the most recent attacks on Trump has been that when he met with the Russians to give and gave them classified material, the controversy is whether he told them that Israel was the source of that, of the technology. Trump denies it. Other people say he did. But the controversy highlights a very important fact that you really have to keep in mind. This White House is a battle zone, not a residence, for Donald Trump. This poor guy probably can't go to the bathroom without some Obama spy recording the visit. The White House is filled with Obama people. What happened was that in the last month of the Obama presidency, he went around appointing people to key positions, including dozens of them in the White House, and transferring them to civil service status so that they could not be fired. They had been political appointees, but he changed the job classification to put them under civil service, deliberately seeding the White House with moles. After Trump had won the election. This process didn't go on before Election Day because he assumed Hillary would win. But in December and January, there were wholesale changes in job classifications, with the result that virtually everywhere Trump turns, whether the usher that brings up a Coke for him, or the guy who serves dinner, or the person who clears the plates, or the guy who cleans the hallway, he's in a nest of spies, a viper's nest of spies. And when you look at the leaks that have emerged from the White House, they all come from someone who's right there. When he met with the foreign minister of Russia and allegedly gave classified information, which it was his complete right to do as president, and he exercised his judgment and felt that it was worthwhile sharing this because it might increase Russian willingness to participate in anti-terror operations in the Middle East. Perfectly reasonable presidential decision, but it was immediately leaked, and that was obviously from somebody who heard the meeting, who either read the transcript or went in and out of the meeting serving refreshments or something. And it is just horrible that this kind of leaking is happening. Trump recently identified three, Trump's administration identified three leakers, and they were all civil service employees in the White House, who had started as political employees by Obama, and Obama shifted their appointment to civil service status. And just think what this means for Trump, what it's like to live in a house where you have to look over your shoulder every minute of the time. The White House is not just an office, it's a home. And it just must undermine him tremendously. And it's part of a program of deliberate sabotage by Obama. Now, it's one of a piece of a number of things that Obama's done. And my wife and I have a book coming out.
Shameful. Now, you hear that when the information came in to the White House that it from our ally in Great Britain, that was immediately leaked, too, to discredit Trump. Check it out. Escalators. Jim Gaffigan.
I prefer the easy way in life. I do. I see an escalator, I get excited. I'm like, sweet, all I got to do is keep my balance. People look so bored on escalators. They're always like, ah. You should be like, I'm going upstairs and I'm moving my leg. I like to pretend I'm in charge of the escalator, turn to the people behind me. You got to follow me. Stand there. Keep that pace. You ever been on an escalator and someone starts walking up behind you? Like, settle down, weirdo. This is one of the good parts of life. Some of those people that take the stairs right next to the escalator. What are you, drunk? This thing's free. You don't need a ticket. They're always like, I'm taking the stairs because I'm watching my cholesterol. And then halfway up, they always have that look in their eyes. I've made an enormous mistake. These stairs are hard. The escalator definitely makes you look down on stairs. They're nothing more than an organized hill. The only thing worse than walking upstairs is walking up an escalator that's not working. What's the point? It's like having a dead butler. Come on. My butler died last week. We all look so confused when we encounter the escalator that's not working. How am I supposed to get up there? I'm trapped! Help! Help! I don't like it when they separate the up and the down escalator. They do that in malls. You're like, well, here's the down escalator. Where's the up? Oh, that's conveniently located a mile away. Did you bring a canoe? Because there's a river. That's amazing. After all our technological advancements, we still can't get the escalator handrail to go the same speed as the escalator. Looks like my hand's going to get up there before me. See up there, hand? I'd wave, but I don't have a hand. The moving sidewalk. That's like the cousin of the escalator. Those are sweet. There is always that moment when I'm getting off a moving sidewalk where I'm like, how do I walk again? I haven't done it in like 10 feet. Learning to walk again. You ever find yourself walking on a moving sidewalk? You start passing people. For a second, don't you feel bionic? You're like, dun, 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 dun. See you slow folks in the Cinnabon. Dun, 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 dun. He's like a professional walker. He's like Walker, Texas Ranger Walker. Have you been on the moving sidewalk that has the announcement? Sidewalk is ending. Are we that dumb? Were there people standing at the end? Well, this is going real slow now. Oh, it stopped? Well, why did they make an announcement? I don't have time to look down. I'm busy daydreaming here.
All right, folks. We'll take a break on the hour and... Ben Rossin will be here in just a minute for the Rossin Report. 659, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180. Text. All right, so we do have Ben Rossin in here right now, and some company. How's it going, Ben?
Good morning, Kelly. It's going well. How are you?
Not too bad.
I brought with me this morning two of my daughters, so I've got them in the studio here watching the program this morning.
Fantastic. All right, so I saw a little setback on the bus.
Yeah, unfortunately, Kelly, at the last county commission meeting, two commissioners changed their mind about the bus system, Commissioner Vasquez and Commissioner Gonzalez, who had previously not supported the bus system, decided to go ahead and give them the funding that they were requesting.
Why?
You know, Kelly, they never said why. So it's kind of hard to guess at it. Perhaps there's something that happened behind the scenes that people aren't aware of. You know, it's been kind of frustrating. You know, hey, Commissioner Garrett's been in support of the transit system for a long time, and I understand why he's in support of it. I've been in opposition to it for a long time, and I think I've been very clear about why I'm in opposition to it. it's hard for me when you have commissioners who take a stand one way and then take a stand a different way another time. You never know what they're thinking, where they're going to go, and it makes it very difficult.
So there was no discussion that led up to them changing their vote?
Not from the commissioners. There was a significant discussion that we had from people that came to speak to us. We had 42 people that stood up to say something in support of the bus system. You know, Kelly, it was really very interesting to me during the public input parts. We had people who told us that it was disgraceful and that they were ashamed of the commission for not supporting the transit district and the will of the people. And it was really funny as I'm listening to that and I'm going, the will of the people. We had an election on this to find out what the will of the people was.
Yeah.
And here in Doñana County, 22,800 of them said no. But because we had 42 people show up at a commission meeting saying, you have to listen to those 42 of us that showed up, all of a sudden that changed people's minds.
So do you think they were just scared they wouldn't get reelected kind of a thing?
You know, Kelly, that might be it. There might have been some trades behind the scenes for other votes. It's hard to tell.
So has the ridership increased significantly?
Well, on one of the lines, the ridership has increased significantly. The line from Anthony to Chaparral that now goes into El Paso has had a very significant ridership increase because we're now picking up people in El Paso or in Texas and taking them to El Paso. The ironic thing is here we are using county taxpayer dollars, and we heard public input about how this is bringing people into the city of Las Cruces to spend money. No, what we're doing now is we're taking money from Las Cruces to pick up Texans to move them to El Paso to spend their money in El Paso. I mean, it's just astonishing to me that El Paso doesn't pay anything for this. And instead of letting El Paso and Texas provide their own transportation for their residents, now we're picking up their residents for them at no charge so that we can help El Paso do their job.
Interesting. Well,
And Kelly, I say that the real reason they've done that is just to show increased ridership.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a game. They're playing a game.
It's a game, and it's a frustrating game, but we'll see where we go from here. There will be one additional step that'll be needed, Kelly. So what happened in the last meeting was that $350,000 went into the budget. There'll have to be another action to take that money and actually give it to the transit district. And I hope that if the commission is going to do that, that we put some restrictions on it. There's no reason that we ought to be picking up people in Texas and taking them to El Paso if El Paso is not a member of the South Central Regional Transit District. The city of Anthony has refused to be a member of the district. There's no reason that we ought to have the bus going into Anthony when Anthony has refused to participate in the cost of the program.
So there was a vote a couple of meetings ago to get rid of the bus.
Correct.
And then there was a meeting to return $350,000. Could every meeting have a vote on the bus? Could it be raised from the dead and killed from one meeting to the next every time?
And Commissioner Garrett brought that up. He said, you know, if this doesn't pass today, we'll just have to talk about it every 2 weeks. In essence, holding the commission hostage if he didn't get his way. And that's really astonishing to me.
Has he ever put into words why exactly we had to have a bus, especially when the ridership was way down? Did he ever articulate his?
Well, the response to the ridership is you have to give it time.
Right.
It's still a new bus system.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly, this isn't a new system. The system has been around since 2014. The system's been around for over 3 years and still doesn't have ridership. So the argument that you just have to give it time, we've given it over 3 years. It can't get the ridership up. And Kelly, the reason it can't get the ridership up is it's not providing a need to the residents.
All right. So did Billy Garrett ever explain why we had to have the bus in the first place? Not wait for ridership, but what is the central vision that he is, or, you know, that he's funding or he's articulating?
Kelly, you'd have to ask him.
Billy, I know you're listening. Call in. I mean, I just think it's your off the shelf everyday leftism. It's just socialism has within its tenets, one of the beliefs is that there has to be rapid or transit or at least public transportation for the people.
That's right. But Kelly, if the people aren't riding it, it's not helping them. And we had an individual that came up and said, hey, I ride the bus every single day. Well, that's great.
Wait, let me guess. It was the bus driver?
No, it wasn't. Kelly, what's happening, though, is when they report these numbers, oh, we've got so many riders. Well, that's not really riders. That's how many people have ridden one segment of a bus route. So when you have somebody going from Chaparral to Las Cruces, they're counted twice, once from Chaparral to Anthony and then once from Anthony to Las Cruces. And if they come home again, they're counted two more times. So that one person counts four times. If this individual rides that bus every day, as he said he does, that means four times a day, times 22 working days in the month, Monday through Friday. So this one individual counts as 88 riders each month. And so that's where you start to see the fallacy of the numbers. You know, the transit district keeps talking about, hey, we have all these riders. Well, no, you're counting each individual rider up to 88 times just to show higher numbers. And that's not appropriate. It's fuzzy math, you know. It's just crazy.
All right, so I just got a text. Why don't you propose to dissolve, quote, the sanctuary city status of this area that will make way for ICE to round up drug dealers in sleeper cells? Any response?
Well, we'd need to have support on the commission to get that done. The nice thing about the county commission is it only takes three people to set policy, but it does take three people. So the county has previously done several things to qualify as a sanctuary county. The first one was in 2014, a safe communities ordinance that forbid the sheriff's department from asking if somebody's what country they're from. So they're not able to ask that question. Then we've taken, or the county has, I say we only because I'm grouped in with this panel, not because I'm in support.
Are they the same as the old panel?
Well, you know, Kelly, the new commission has been much more receptive, and it's better. But we still have Kelly, I'm still the only Republican on there. And so there's still challenges.
So is there a pro and con to the sanctuary city? Is there something we benefit? Let's just, for the sake of the argument, we are setting it as a public policy. What's our benefit to being a sanctuary city or a sanctuary county?
Well, Kelly, I think one of the concerns that you have is if somebody is a victim of a crime, they're less likely to report the crime if they could be deported themselves.
Right.
And so you end up with individuals who prey on illegal aliens or illegal people that are here. So that's what the deal is, or that's what the argument is we need to allow them to report these crimes, and so we have to protect them. But there are already state laws and federal laws that do that, Kelly. And so it's, I think that's the emotional argument that's made that's not backed up with a real factual need.
All right. So take a break here. Are you going to stick around and talk about anything else?
Kelly, I'm probably going to take off, but I did want to mention one other thing real quick, if
ahead.
I could. So the new county chair for the Democrat Party came out in the bulletin, and he said that his number one priority, place me. And so I'm starting a fundraising effort. We're going to make sure that I'm up for re-election next year, Kelly. And so it sounds like I'm the number one target for the Democrats here in Doñana County. And so we're working on some fundraising. If anyone would like to contribute, you could write a check and mail it to P.O. Box 996, Las Cruces, New Mexico.
996 P.O. Box. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell's show. Who's this?
This is Aaron.
Morning, Aaron. Hope you're well. And what's on your mind? What's your point?
I had a question for councilman there. I read a while back that the county started a loan program to all county employees. And while that sounds all fine and good, I just wondered what happens when the program starts to show a loss. And who pays for those losses? Because when you're in a loan program or you're making loans to people, you're inevitably going to have losses.
That's right.
So how is that being handled?
So, Aaron, the past county manager, Julia Brown, found a firm online that would do these loans. And so the county's not actually making the loans. What this other firm is doing is they're making the loans, and then the county collects on the paycheck and sends the money into the loan company. There's no risk for the county from the standpoint that if somebody leaves employment, that's between them and the loan company. There's no financial responsibility on the county. However, it does make the county the collector of this tax, or excuse me, of this of the loan repayment. And I'm not sure that's the right place for the county to be.
Maybe we can expand into online gambling as well.
Not only that, but was there a process in which there were bids put in place for people that wanted to run this program, or was it somebody that she had a brother-in-law running, or how did that work? How did you find this company?
Aaron, that's a very good question. I'm glad you brought that up. No, there was no public RFP that was gone through. Normally, if the county wants to contract with someone, we go through an RFP process, we get bidders in, and then determine who the best bidder is. And that process was not followed in this, Aaron. This company was just selected and put into place.
Thanks for the call, Aaron. Have a good day. All right. So was there anything else?
That's it, Kelly. Thanks for having me on. See you next week.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for coming in, girls. They're not saying much.
Thanks, Kelly.
All right. See you later. All right, folks, we'll take a break here and come back and hit a little more news. 719-523-1450. Give me your opinion on Ty Chan. What should happen next? Whose fault is it? We'll be right back. Got a ton of stuff that I haven't gotten to for the last couple of days, but I was looking for what I thought you guys might find to be the most interesting. Olga Pedrosa announcing she's not going to run again for city council. Wonder if she's retiring to Cuba. I believe she had a picture of Fidel Castro. Someone, anyway, this is just a rumor, but someone had said that she had a picture of Fidel Castro on her desk, but maybe it was Stalin or somebody like that. Now, all right. I've got a story about the hottest chili. And when I saved this thing, I went back to it. It was gone. Sometimes stories disappear, but I gotta get a hold of this thing. It was pretty interesting. The guy that developed it said he was using it for the purpose of treating people. Believe it or not. All right, here we go. Man accidentally creates world's hottest chili pepper. And this is from the Palm Beach Post. A British man says he doesn't even enjoy spicy food, but he accidentally created, nonetheless, the hottest chili pepper ever recorded. Mike Smith, a Welsh fruit grower, said he was trying to create, quote, a thing of beauty when he collaborated with scientists from Nottingham Trent University to grow the Dragon's Breath chili. And the chili measures 2.48 million on the Scoville heat scale, which beats the Carolina Reaper measured at 2.2 million, which is quite a jump, huh? And he says, I've tried it on the tip of my tongue and it just burned and burned. I spat it out in about 10 seconds. These peppers are so hot that experts believe if a person swallowed one, he or she could die. And another story right next to it, a man undergoes emergency surgery after eating ghost chili pepper. Hottest pepper at one point, I believe, was the ghost. And he was in an eating competition, the individual, and he began to vomit rather violently after eating a hamburger with ghost chili pepper puree. He suffered from severe abdominal pain, leading to his admittance to a local hospital. Doctors found a hole in his esophagus, 2.5 centimeters, which necessitated emergency surgery in a mere 23 days in the hospital to have some more good food, though doctors initially thought the man was reacting to a gluttonous meal. The hole in the man's esophagus allowed them to conclude it was from another source. Such a rupture in the esophagus, known as Borhave syndrome, are a danger for death and complication. Ghost chili peppers are a mere 1 million of these Scoville units. All right, here's a question for you. We've talked occasionally about this. Does it seem to you that society is becoming less kind and polite and loving? Well, it's something that I've kind of noticed for quite a while, for a number of years. And I'm wondering, for you people who are interested in sociology, what is the reason for this? You can blame it on social media. Or is it a fiction in my mind to begin with? But the people that I ask about this say without variation that, yes, things have changed. And what I've noticed is, and I just think, bringing this up because I happen to have a clip I have a story about the end times. And so I'm wondering, do you see it as part of a bigger cycle? It's no big deal, because at some point we'll become more polite. Are we evolving in which we realize that we don't no longer need to really be polite or thankful, grateful, you know, this entitled attitude? Well, here's one thing that I thought about, is that when I had Pastor Pickett on the other day, and we had talked about the happiest people being those individuals who are serving others. All right, just follow me here a little bit. This would be true for people that you knew casually, strangers, your friends, the people that you're dating or you're married to, family members, workers, people that you work with and such. But if, let's just put it into a dating relationship. If two people are getting together to date and they're attracted to one another for whatever reason, and they're only trying to get their own needs met, which is kind of what I'm kind of talking about, is this kind of movement in which the only thing that you need to worry about is getting your own needs met, you know, getting your own and then moving on. If that's true, then it would seem to me that romantic relationships are not as enjoyable as they used to be, because if we get the most pleasure out of serving other people, trying to meet other people's needs instead of our own, if that's true psychologically, but we have injected this kind of utilitarianism. There, I'm going to use another person as a utility, as a tool to meet my needs. Then it would seem like, for example, that romantic relationships wouldn't be as fulfilling, because both people are only thinking about themselves, which is not the highest level of enjoyment according to these studies, the highest level of happiness. And the other person's probably going to pick up on it, and it's going to put a shelf life on the relationship, right? So I'm wondering, and that's just using their dating relationship as an example, but people, you know, really don't talk about lifelong love anymore, getting married forever anymore, about marriage. They're pretty cynical. But I'm thinking about how this would affect all relationships. And when you let somebody out in traffic and the person doesn't wave to you, you know, there's a long line of traffic and you hold up so the person can get out. In the old days, it would go without saying that the person would wave to say thank you. So today, if a person is holding a place in line, you know, like the long line of traffic, the car comes out, no wave, does that person think it was an accident? They don't even think about it? That it's against their ethics to say thank you? That people that say thank you are suckers, or they're too busy to acknowledge other? You know, I'm just curious. We have all of these kind of interactions. I really don't think this is a, you know, left, you know, liberal conservative thing, although I would say, I think if you study the history of manners and then you would go back to a place like Charlemagne, where they assiduously began to bring in elements of politeness in the court and then through the society. But what is it? So what does it mean if we're all in a utilitarian mode? What does that mean about us? That we're selfish, we're self-centered, or we're being realistic? Would it bother you when you dated somebody and they were utilitarian? They were just there to get theirs? I mean, here's this one thing I just throw out there to think about your thought. We all have this thing in us that we want to be treated as special, right? And it stays intact from when we were little kids, and little kids need to be treated with, you know, sympathy and understanding and love, and obviously it's an enormous amount of commitment and dedication in a parent training up a child, the money, the sleepless nights, the, you know, dealing with all the emotion, the aspects of emotional growth and all these things. For the kid to thrive in society, somebody's got to do that with him. Has this new utilitarianism affected how parents enjoy their kids and kids enjoy their parents? Is it just become for a lot of parents a sickening job they can't wait until the 18th year is up? I am kind of fascinated by this because I think it is a pollution. It's a mental pollution. It's ethical, moral pollution in the society. But I think it also takes away the enjoyment from life. If you're the kind of person who cannot say thank you, I'm guessing that your life is probably not as enjoyable as it could be. But anyway, 523-1450 to call in. The phone bank's not exactly lighting up. 805-61802 text, but we'll be right back. I mean, I've got some local news for you right here. All right, I've got a story about a girl who was sleeping in a hammock just a couple of days ago, 15 years old. She was on a camping trip and with some friends, and this is in Georgia, when the tree she was hanging from snapped in half and fell down on her and killed her. I mean, what a story, huh? And it was on her birthday, believe it or not. And she was a sophomore in high school. So very weird story. And the girls were sitting around the campfire. And only one of them was faced towards her. So only one of them saw the tree fall down. But it hit her in the spine and in the head, and so she ended up suffering some pretty serious injuries. Joelle Dalgaish from Harrison High School in Kennesaw. So another story. Woman cut off man's male organ in self-defense after he tried to rape her, and this is in India. And she was a law student, and there was a guy that always came over to her house that her family held in very high esteem because he was a Swami. And Harry Swami, as a matter of fact, was his name. And she said that when he would show up, he would always try to abuse her, and she finally got sick of it. And she got a knife, and... he came after her, and she let him have it. And he is now in serious shape in the hospital. All right, now here is a great story, and so we were speaking of dating. First date from hell, man sues woman for texting at movies, May 17th. And this is in Australia, the newspaper, but it's a Texas woman got a reminder that this week that dating is the worst activity. The 35-year-old woman may be facing a legal dispute after a man she met online, Brandon Besmar, sued her last week for texting during their first date to the movies, according to the American Statesman. Besmar, 37, filed a claim against his failed love interest, who did not want to be identified, asking her to reimburse him for the U.S. $17.31 tickets, I guess, to a 3D showing of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 in Austin, Texas. Besmar claims his date started texting about 15 minutes into the film, which is apparently a movie etiquette transgression in his book, and he says, "It was kind of a first date from hell," he told the Statesman. "This is like one of my biggest pet peeves." He claimed that she used her phone 10 to 20 times in a 15-minute period and refused his request that she stop when she would not put the phone away. Besmar said he suggested she go outside to text. The woman left and never returned. While the damages are modest, the principle is important as defendant's behavior is a threat to civilized society, said the lawsuit. And the woman was contacted, and she said, "For heaven's sakes, I had my phone low, and I wasn't bothering anybody." And she said that when she was called, that she was unaware of the legal action that had been unleashed against her, but denied that she was constantly texting. And Besmar contacted the woman after the doomed date, asking to be repaid for the tickets, but she refused because, quote, "he took me on the date." And Besmar also contacted her younger sister asking for money for the movie. "I'm not a bad woman," she said. "I just went out on a date." Well, I guess she should have left her phone in the car. What do you think about that? Texting. People that text in front of you, you're talking to them. They're texting. They're at work and they're texting. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Oh, good morning, Kelly. Steve Trowbridge.
Steve. Hi. Well, great. Haven't heard from you in a while. How you been?
Good, well, thanks. Different hours, different shift. So I missed your show, but I got the key of the county commissioner this morning, and that was riveting and brought a smile to my lips. And I'm glad it's kind of an inspiration to hear the county commissioner. He hasn't lost his enthusiasm and optimism.
Well,
and I think it's well grounded. So
he's public enemy number one. They're trying to get rid of him.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a badge of courage. He can wear that proudly.
Right.
And I don't think that.
You don't think that'll work?
Democratic Party chair, I haven't met him, but, you know, he's lived here at least 18 months. And I don't think that's going anywhere. Anyway, it's a sad display with the mass transit systems. It's massive subsidies to it. But you're right, it's held as like a holy grail. It's something that can't be questioned. It's just, the holy elephant in the room.
I take it as an element of a social, the idea of a socialist society, a semi-utopian society, but why do they cling to it if nobody's writing?
You're right. I mean, you have to understand it almost on emotional terms. It fulfills some deep social emotional need of theirs, and it's nonsense. It's just denial of reality. And I mean, I've heard other counselors do paperwork, some back of the envelope sort of calculations that it would be cheaper just to give everybody a $2,000 car, or you know, but it's the holy grail of urban planning. But I've gone to public meetings and people have no inkling. They want buses going north, south, east, west, so they can just walk, get on any bus anytime. They should be free, just like in, you know, I'll say in Denmark or someplace.
Well,
else.
I mean, if
but they never want to look at how they do it in Denmark, it's because the taxes on a car are more than price of the car. The gasoline is $10 a gallon. You know, they never want to see, how do they do that? Bernie Sanders will go on about a single-payer system, but he never questions, well, here are the 10 or 15 different things that you would have to do to institute, adopt, and implement a single-payer system. And you would never get to be able to recite the first five because people would shut you off or shut you down. So what do you call it? A utopian, thoughtful, wishful thinking, this dream making, this magical thinking.
Yes, magical thinking.
They provide the buses, people will use them. You see the same thing on the massive investment the city's made in bicycle lanes, but there's no pretty bicycling. I mean, you see a couple lost souls sometimes, maybe one or two, health enthusiasts, but in no way warrants and justifies the investment that we're making.
Well,
but it makes people feel good.
Yeah.
It makes them feel good, and that's the key. That's what my Democratic Party friends—they're longing for. They want to feel good. They want to feel virtuous. And you've heard all that before.
Well, it's just kind of frustrating because the people act like. This move from the left is they have all of these beliefs that they will not talk about because, like you say, they're sacred. If you try to challenge them on it, a lot of times they'll pretend that they don't have certain beliefs or they just won't engage on them because they're beyond any rational level. They're not open for rational discussion, and they want to let you know in one way or another, sometimes by shouting people down, by not listening, by refusing to take them seriously, that they're smarter and better than they are. And it is a tragedy because that kills public debate, serious public debate. If you have a religion, keep it in your church in terms of knowing where it came. I mean, I'm all in favor of people being religious, but if you have a fake religion, which is what socialism is, you need to understand where it came from and what it's made out of so you can be realistic with yourself and not put unnecessary or unreasonable restraints on other people in terms of them funding your dream.
You're going to the heart of it. But it's self-congratulatory. It makes them feel superior. And but they never, you're right, they never stop to think of the sacrifice they're asking of others. And when you ask them, they just say, it's tax dollars. They write it off. Well, and then you have to try and convince them that money is these tax dollars or the stored labor of the
very
world.
Very nice, yeah. But they see,
and that's the only way you can get to them.
Steve, they see the money as being in the public kitty. I got to take a break here, but thanks for the call, Steve. Great call. All right, folks, let's go to a little, we got some weather right here. 746, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, same 1455, 23, 1450, and 805-6180 for your text. DUI suspect had lizard stuffed in her bra. This is from about a week ago. And I do have a clip here if it plays.
This big bang. And it sounded like a car crash.
A quick end to a drunken joyride. The Mercedes landed in a yard after taking out a half dozen mailboxes.
Hey, it's Kelly. Can you hear me? It's Kelly. Can you hear me?
Very wobbly.
Amy Robello McCarthy.
Kelly, can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, let me put you on hold. Hold on.
Figured they'd find a drunken
driver. I'll put you on hold. Can you hear me?
For the worst, shocked by the artist. A fake gun on him, a lizard on her.
A lizard?
A lizard.
That's odd.
Yeah, a little odd.
I didn't see that.
I don't know why she'd have a lizard under her shirt.
One lucky lizard that lived to ride again, surviving the crash tucked under Mom's shirt. Frankly, we can't tell you why.
All right, and we do have a phone call. I think it's Frankie. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show is this.
It is Frankie, by golly. Yes, it is.
Good morning, Frankie. What's up?
Well, I just thought, you know, you didn't make, I gave you the whole, almost the whole 2 hours to catch on and make a comment on, but you didn't. So before you shut the show down, I would like to know what your thought process and that of all your millions of listeners on how this Cheeto Man president of ours kicked Sean Spicer out of the meet with the Pope, being that Sean Spicer is a very devout Catholic. I thought that was very crude, rude, and typically conservative.
I didn't hear about this. So where did you pick this up at? I'm looking for it.
Oh, just well, you got to type in Vatican Sean Spicer, where he was not allowed, or Trump did not let him attend while he was over there in Italy, in the Vatican. I thought that was pretty.
I don't know anything about it, so.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, what kind of a search engine do you use?
Well, I've got Google right here. It's just not it's not a story that popped up when I was doing my prep for the show.
You know, that's one of the reasons why.
Oh, wait a
minute.
Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on a second.
I prefer Yahoo.
All right.
Yahoo gives you a lot of stories.
Okay, but hold on a second. You're an atheist. What do you care whether somebody goes to meet the Pope?
That's not the point, me being an atheist and about the Pope stuff. I'm talking about your people, your conservatives out there denying a true blue worker or Trumper not to be able to practice or at least see his hero, the Pope. I thought that was disgusting. I don't care. You know, that's one of the luxuries of being an atheist. I don't have to worry about meeting a Pope or an imam or a rabbi or anybody like that. Who cares? I don't care.
I mean, I really honestly don't care, but I mean, maybe it's a big story and I just can't grasp it. Anything else?
Oh, she was.
Anything else?
No, but I mean, go look for that. So, Roger, if
all right.
You can't, well, like, I've
got the
I
story right
here.
No, no, I've got this. I've got
to...
Frankie, hold on a second. I've got the story right here, but I'm looking at it. I just didn't seem like that big of a deal. I've got another call. Thanks for the call. Have a good day. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show is this.
Morning, Kelly. This is David. I'm going to call myself Coyote from now on when I do prophecies. What's happening in Big Sur, the mudslides that are happening is a direct result of two faults coming in straight from Hawaii, huge faults which have caused a change of water temperatures, which have caused all this rain that's been coming through. It's like a conveyor belt coming in, and that is the Murray Fault and the Makakilo of Molokai. Molokai Fault, both of them running right into the area.
Wait a minute.
The mudslide.
Wait a minute. The Mufti of Molokai, what the...
Yeah, thank you. It's Molokai Fault and the Murray Fault running straight from Hawaii into the California Big Sur area.
It sounds so important, so serious. So is the globe falling apart?
Well, it's a fingernail of heading right into the San Andreas, which runs down to Mexico, and it's an earth activity starting up, like I called up a couple weeks ago, and you hung up on me like this. Well, I told you about in about 3 months, it is starting to happen.
I hung up on you. Maybe it's because it's too much information to digest, so I don't know what you're talking about some of the time.
Have a good day.
You too. All right, folks, don't get upset if I hang up on you. It's nothing personal. But the number one thing that people have complained about is people that call up and go on too long. It's not my reaction. It is the reaction of the people that are listening. So I got to, you know, spend some time. But I did go back and listen, and I thought a lot of people say when people call they turn turn off the radio. So I was thinking, well, how could I make it more enjoyable? Well, to shorten it is maybe one of the things. And another thing is if someone is going on something that's obscure like David right there, the fingernail out of the Mufti of Molokai, that's on the San Andreas Fault. I don't think a lot of people can follow that. But Spicer's absence and papal visit reveals Trump's family first rule. That's from CNN. So, well, maybe you got to see him behind the curtain. Maybe he wasn't allowed near him. All right. The Patriots are trying out a kicker who can kick a ball 80 yards, and he is, but they don't hold your breath. He's not going to replace the other guy. Here's Tom Papa, big head. I don't know if I've ever played this, but it's funny.
All right. Love her. I can't. I take her to the park and kids already, you know, mean to her, you know, a little older, knock her down. No, no, you're not playing with no. Oh, your heart breaks. Like, I just want to punch that 2-year-old right in the face. What are you doing? You started it. What? I just want to protect her. I don't want to send her out to the world's evil, you know? You're at home, everyone loves you, and they're so nice to you, and they go out in the world, they find that one little thing, and they attack you. Oh, why does your eye do that? Look at this guy's eye. Hey, googly eye. We all go through it. I did. In third grade, I had the same size head I have right now. I used to wake up.